Stop! Don't move.
Who's that? What are you doing down here? This is a restricted area.
Not to me, it's not.
Harris had the satisfaction of seeing the man's eyes widen and his face go pale. A petty major, Dorson by his name tag.
Captain. Sorry, sir. I thought it was one of the raiding sneaking about.
Turn off that torch, Corporal Acer.
The equally pale-faced young man complied with a quick glance at the petty major.
Now suppose you explain to me why you were about to use that torch on this equipment.
The petty major turned a poisonous glance on the corporal.
Well, this man found a drip in the line. It dripped last shift, too. And I'd had him put some glove on it. But it was dripping again, so I told him to get the torch out and patch it properly.
I see. Corporal, explain your objection.
Captain, this is a new joint just installed at the refit. There's always a little dripping with new installations, but the way Captain Costance taught me to handle it was to glove it until the sediment had a chance to build in. That cushions it against pump surge, too, where the rigid fix wouldn't. But more than that, you don't want to put metal vapor onto this stuff. It eventually corrodes the line, and then you're in worse trouble.
Petty Major Dorson, how long have you been in shipboard environmental?
Shipboard, Captain? Never, really. My main specialty is administration. Records division. I guess they put me on this list because I've been keeping the regional headquarters files on the environmental issues up to date.
And on the basis of that lack of experience, you saw fit to overrule a man who's actually been doing this job?
I didn't see where it could do any harm.
Petty Major Dorson, can you explain why the aft personnel lock hatches were jammed open and the sensor blanked?
What's wrong with that? As long as both the aft and forward locks are fully open, then the pressure equalizes.
Out of the corner of her eye, Harris could see the corporal's not quite successful attempt to hide his reaction to this.
The point of the locks is so the pressure won't equalize, so that a problem on one side does not get to the other.
But we're not in combat. They only close the section hatches in combat.
Harris turned to Acer.
Corporal, rack that torch where it belongs and go secure the forward personnel lock. I've secured the aft already. If you see other personnel, say nothing to them. Pick up the forward logbook, then come back.
Yes, sir.
Acer practically scampered away, exuding virtue. Harris turned to the hapless petty officer.
Petty Major Dorson, you know nothing about a real environmental system. You will have to learn. But since you nearly caused a major breakdown, which could have had fatal consequences, you are relieved from your duties here. You will begin studying environmental systems with the introductory course, and you will have completed the first two chapters by the end of this shift. I'll expect to see your exam scores above 90% if you want to retain your stripes.
Yes, sir.
Dorson looked more stunned than contrite, but at least he wasn't arguing.
When you finish the introductory course, you will report to Environmental as an apprentice tech, only because we are shorthanded with real techs, and you will obey the orders of anyone who has more experience. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Harris looked up to see Corporal Acer approaching.
Corporal, what are the most recent readings?
Most recent? I guess that would be...
I don't want guesses, Corporal. Let's see that logbook.
She glanced at the last page.
Is that your signature, Corporal?
Yes, Captain.
I see that you've recorded all values as nominal. I presume that means you checked every gauge and every readout.
No, sir. Not all of them.
In other words, you falsified the log?
Yes, sir. I initialed that entry. And, yes, sir, I signed off on the checks I hadn't made.
Harris folded the logbook and tapped it against her leg. They both looked as if they would much rather be facing an open airlock than her, and that's exactly how she wanted them to feel.
We have two problems here. We have incompetence, attempting to rest on rank alone for authority, and we have competence choosing to be dishonest. Frankly, I have no use for either, but this is a war and I'm stuck with you. We can deal with this at Captain's Mast, or we can deal with this here and now. It's up to you.
Now, if the captain wishes.
The petty officer just nodded. Harris cocked her head at Acer.
Corporal, I don't know why you zanged that log. You may think you had a good reason.
She paused to see if he would try to produce an excuse, but he just stood there, sweating. All the better.
But in my books, nothing. Nothing at all justifies lying to your captain, and that's what you did. I'm extremely displeased. and your competence in your specialty does not in any way change that. I'm reducing you to pivot. You'll report to the exec at first shift and get your records changed.
A drop slid down beside Acer's ear, but he did not attempt to wipe it off.
Yes, sir.
Petty Major Dorson, I will not tolerate the use of formal rank to cover up ignorance and incompetence. It is not your fault that you were assigned a job you didn't know how to do. It is your fault that you didn't listen to someone who did know. It is a form of dishonesty only slightly less flagrant than the corporal's. I mean, pivots. When you pretend to know what you don't know. I'm reducing you to sergeant. You will also report at the start of first shift to change your records.
Yes, sir.
You will find that I promote as readily as I demote, if performance warrants. Don't throw your stripes away. Now, Dorson, go up and get busy on your lessons. Use the midship's ladder. Pivot, you come with me.
They passed through the forward lock and walked back aft, Harris watching for the rest of the shift's crew. She found them in a circle playing cards. Three pivots, a pivot major, and another corporal. In one searing blast, she reduced everyone to pivot who wasn't already and put them all on extra duty, which, for the ones who had no prior environmental experience, meant shifts spent at the cube reader, getting qualified. When she was through, she turned to pivot Acer.
You're now in command of this shift. You will see to it that first shift finds all values nominal, and you will keep an accurate log. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
If I can find another qualified person, I'll send him down. In the meantime, it's up to you to whip this bunch into shape. I believe you can do it.
Harris was back in her own quarters before she remembered that she hadn't taken off the tack tape, which would enable her to tell if anyone had sneaked away. She looked at her chronometer. Only 2 hours to sleep before she had to be bright and energetic for first shift business. Sleepy commanders make bad decisions, she told herself, diving under the covers again. After all, tomorrow night, it was the turn of drives to have a roaming captain in their midst. She could remove the tack tape then. Solomon Drige, once an admiral minor in the regular space service, and now commander-in-chief of the Mutineer Fleet, plotted the newest arrival on his chart. They had been unlucky at Copper Mountain. If they'd had the 3 weeks he'd planned for, all the Mutineer ships could have assembled with sufficient manpower to gain control of the planet and its resources. Luck of war, no use complaining. Here, at least, no accidental passerby should find them. Here, he could assemble his fellow mutineers, train them, and create a force that the government could not ignore.
The Pescue is right. War's the best test of man, and hunting men is the next best.
Drige grinned to himself. Fleet had gone soft because the government had gone soft. Always seeking peace, always looking for a way out. He'd had hopes of Thornbuckle when Thornbuckle sent Fleet to rescue his daughter. Any excuse for war was better than no war at all. But then Thornbuckle had died, shot down by a better hunter. The hunt proves your real nature, whether you are prey or hunter. And the new chairman, Hobart Consoline, all he cared about was profit and long life.
He thinks like a cow.
Sir?
That was his flag captain, Gerard Montague.
Consoline. All belly. But he'll learn. They all will.
They would bow at last. They would have to, when the loss of civilian lives rose high enough. Then he would command not just the mutineers, but all of Fleet. And Fleet would command the government. No more begging humbly for the cheapest supplies. They would have the best, and no arguments.
They still have some good commanders, and more ships.
True, but they don't have our edge. Ship for ship, we're superior. Survival through victory, it's the only way. Besides, there are only a few to worry about.
Serrano.
Serrano, yes.
For a moment, Drige allowed himself to regret that Harris Serrano wasn't one of his people. She had the right instincts. She would have been a powerful and valuable ally. But she had destroyed his mentor, exposed Lepescu to the world as a vicious killer, denounced those who followed him. She was an enemy, and he would destroy her, rejoicing in her fall. He looked again at his charts, and cursed the cowards who hadn't yet shown up as they'd promised. He needed more ships now, before the Loyalists had time to organize an effective defense. In the meantime, awaiting the arrival of the others, he could train this nucleus.
Tight beam to all ships. Close in for drill.
A few days of precision drill, the ships as close as possible, would sharpen the crew's reactions immensely. Then gunnery drill, then micro-jump gunnery. Then the war and the victory. Baron was in the middle of his mid-shift meal. The task force was still picking up loose mines, a ticklish task even with the help of the specialty minesweeper. The diners seemed to freeze in place for a moment, waiting, he realized, for the announcement that this was another exercise. When that didn't come, they all lurched into motion. Lieutenant Marcian picked up his bowl and swigged down the rest of his soup, grabbed two rolls, and bolted for the door. Baron eyed the rest of his stew with regret, grabbed rolls for himself and a hunk of cake from the dessert table, and followed at the double. He had almost reached his station when he staggered. The artificial gravity had wavered for an instant. This was not a good sign. He came around the corner to find Petty Officer O'Neill already in place. He took the list and began calling names, glad that his voice wasn't shaky or shrill. Everyone had made it to station. Juan came jogging up just as he got to that name. Baron reported all present up the tube and got a terse acknowledgement. He wanted to ask what was going on, but knew better. The warning for closing the section seals.
Must have some shield damage.
Less chatter.
Check the seals.
Petty Officer O'Neill took off two of the team for that task and set the others to taking initial readings of the pressure, temperature, artificial gravity, and other factors.
Suit by pairs.
It seemed to take them forever, though he knew the creeping second hand on the chronometer was actually moving at normal speed, and they were suiting up well within the required time. At last it was his turn. He stepped into the P-suit, fastening seals and making attachments, as he wished that ships had the room to provide escape pods for crew, rather than the ultimately fragile P-suits. Baron turned so his partner could check his back, the hang of the air cylinders, the attachments of hose and cable, and then checked his partner's. For now, they didn't need the suit's air supply. For now, they had air in the compartment. If all went well, they would come out of this hot, sweaty, smelly, but with fully charged tanks. If it didn't, they'd have this small, additional chance.
The Serrano Legacy, Against the Odds, is continued on the next CD.